The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
It's probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds. You're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. Joining me, I have one of your favorite Hail Varsity writers, Greg Smith. Greg, hello. How are you?
Hello. I am well, man. It's good to be back with you on the Varsity Club.
This is a big day. I didn't know that it was episode 200 until we got in and started recording and I saw the little 200 number and the headline. This is episode 200 of this podcast, and you have the distinct privilege, the honor of being the 200th guest on this podcast, even though we haven't had 200 guests.
That's amazing. First of all, congratulations. Like, that's a big deal to have 200 episodes of a podcast. So that's really cool. I'm glad we figured that out ahead of time.
Pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And this is the first time that this is on video, kind of as we're doing this. So I fully expect my AirPods and my Bluetooth and my computer to drop out midway through and everything's going to go haywire. I'm completely expecting that to happen. This is cool. There's a little ticker down at the bottom. Get your Hail Varsity subscription. Go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe. Make sure that you're reading all the Hail Varsity content that Greg and everybody over there at the team is putting out. Also, you can get the magazine, which you want to do. Greg also has his own podcast, the Straight Up Breakdown podcast, which you can listen to. It also has a video now, video component on YouTube, where you're if you're watching this, you can go watch his podcast as well or his video as well. We've got other podcasts. This is a proud part of the Herd At Media Network. Go to hailvarsity.com/network, I think, to find every other podcast. Greg, I have a question for you before we get into it. If you could, like, Will Smith, Men in Black, like, brain wipe one movie-going experience or one movie-watching experience from your brain and rewatch any movie for the first time over again, which movie would you want to see again? First experience.
Oh man, that's a really good question. My gut reaction is the very first thing I thought of. I could like wipe it out and then rewatch and experience it all over again. Was Inception, which is kind of ironic given, you know, the subject of that film. Such a good movie. And like the first time, like you're kind of confused, kind of mind blown, really impressed with everything. And so to go through that all over again would actually be really neat.
My brain went to Inception and it also went to Shutter Island. So okay. I guess Leonardo DiCaprio has something just sitting in our subconscious. It's like, you want to watch my movies again?
Maybe. Okay. Well, we didn't say Titanic.
No Titanic fan.
Which I'm not sure I've seen the whole thing front to back. Like, I don't think I've sat down and watched it all consecutively. I know
it's a ridiculously long movie.
Yeah, and I know what happens. So, like, I don't need to go through it all. So, obviously, I was not one of those people that saw it 8 times in theaters.
Also, the entire, like, payoff scene in the movie is inherently flawed. There was space on there for both of them.
There really was. Yeah.
Like this sounds like, it sounds like cliche to say that because every single person in the history of the planet has said that, but like, it's true. There was space on there for both of them. You got us talking about the Titanic on here. Let's talk about football. I have you on here specifically because in a little bit, we're going to talk about teams that you are most excited about or most interested in, or just can't wait to watch on a football field. Spring is wrapping up kind of around the country. As we're recording this, there are a bunch of spring games this weekend. Nebraska's has already happened. It's in the past. We're going to talk about Nebraska coming out of the spring and then lead into a conversation about teams that you just can't wait to watch because it's almost May. Like, we're getting close to football season. It's almost May, which is insane. So I'll ask you this first, Greg, as we are now, what, 2 weekends removed from the Nebraska spring game. How do you feel about Nebraska football exiting the spring? There's a little bit of news this week that may or may not be a big deal, depending on your preference. Do you feel pensive about the team? Do you feel encouraged about the team? Are you still, are you right in the middle, 50-50? I don't want to, we're not going one way or the other. We're just going to wait and to see what happens in fall camp. Where you at?
Man, that it's tough because I would say, man, I guess more pessimistic about the prospects of a successful season, I guess is what I would say right now. And part of that, though, is not necessarily the fault of anything that happened prior to this week. It was really about that we didn't, there's nothing where you saw it come together this spring and you go, man, I feel really good about that, that you didn't coming into the spring already, if that makes sense. So because there was so much overhaul with the offensive staff with four new assistants, you also had a new full-time assistant, Bill Bush, moving into a full-time special teams role. You had what, double-digit transfers coming in, or mid-year enrollees. So you just have a lot of newness that is going on in the program and a lot of things where they've kind of got to figure it out as they go along. And spring was kind of the baseline to get a lot of that stuff installed. So knowing that all on the front end, I'm still not necessarily feeling the warm and fuzzies coming out of spring because all of the same questions that we had coming into spring are the same ones coming out. But it's not necessarily fair to say, oh, they were going to have, say, the offensive line rotation figured out, even though they have two projected starters that didn't practice at all in the spring. So I feel about the same, honestly, that by a long way of saying coming out of the spring that I did going in. And so it's going to end up being, I need to see it when we get to the fall. But there are just so many question marks heading into the summer now and summer conditioning. It still feels like winter. Summer conditioning going on for Nebraska.
Hey, you guys got snow. My aunt and uncle got snow in Omaha on Easter. We got a little bit. It was like weird, like sleet, snowy rain crap. It's weird. Like third winter. I saw a buddy in Indiana that was talking about third winter. So I feel about the same, which is to say you're still a little hesitant to go there with them because there are a ton of questions. So let me ask you this. Frost is notorious for not showing anything in spring. That was even more so the case this spring with all the newness around the team, particularly on offense. If they had just shown you more, like let's say like Frost gives you an entire practice to watch, which didn't happen, but let's just say he gives you an entire practice to watch. Then they show you a little bit more of Casey Thompson in the spring game and a little bit more. Do you think that your hesitancy with the team is just because you didn't see anything and you don't have any questions answered that you wanted to answer going in? Or is it because, you know, like you've seen guys leave the program or you've seen a bit of practice because you get to see like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is at the beginning, a couple times. Like which side are you on?
First of all, we didn't even get this to get that 15 minutes at the beginning this year. So when you say that, like it was like notoriously secretive, it was ratcheted up even from what we normally are in, which also does not, that to me, and right or wrong, it doesn't inspire confidence in me that is going the other way, because to me it's like we don't want people talking about whatever kinks we're working out right now, and maybe that's the wrong way to read that, but I don't know what else I should think given what's happened previous to this, right? And so yeah, I do think though, on the other hand, if I had seen flashes of what like has been shown supposedly from Casey Thompson in practice that's got him as QB1. If we had seen that in the spring game, I would feel a little bit better there. I still don't understand how we didn't get just one in the spring game, just one or two deep shots to Trey Palmer. Like just something to whet the appetite a little bit. Like I'm kind of like curious on that. And so, yeah, I do think that that's part of it, even knowing that there were going to be a lot of questions that just weren't going to be answered. I think the secrecy and the, what did he say, painfully vanilla or basic Frost about the spring game, like so much so that I don't know if you caught this, like Trev Alberts fielded questions about the spring game format in the Athletic Director show on the radio this week or the end of last week, because it was so bad, like from a fan perspective. They got out of it without any additional injury, so that's good. But I don't know how you come out of that thinking, yeah, I feel better about the team. Like, but that may not have been the purpose anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, so many coaches and Frost gets included in this, so many coaches just treat the spring as the spring game is just, it's just a thing we have to do. Fans are going to be there. It's going to be a recruiting event. But the biggest thing for me is to just get out of it healthy. And it doesn't seem like Nebraska got out of the spring period in general healthy. Right. So like when you're dealing with injuries to the degree that it seemed like Nebraska was dealing with injuries, you're not really going to want to show people like how, I guess, restricted your roster is or your practice is, because then, you know, somebody that's going to end up working in the third team in the season is getting first team snaps because there's nobody above them. And then everybody freaks out. Like, why is this person getting first team snaps? But there is something to, you know, like I saw a couple stories from different places around the country where access was opened up a little bit and people were able to go watch practices at specific places. And the narrative coming away, the stories that were written coming away from those practices where people are getting access they don't normally get was, well, it's obvious why they wanted us to see this because they're really good.
Right.
So like, I guess the other way, you know, if you're going to restrict things, then the narrative, right, like you said, right or wrong, is going to be, well, why are you hiding this? But I mean, to Frost credit a little bit, this is the way he's always been.
Yeah, it's not too much of a departure.
Yeah, it's not anything new. Interesting. Okay. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the way it was last season, where you're just like, we just need to see what they look like at the line of scrimmage.
I think that's such a huge part of it, and it sounds kind of like no duh, matter of fact, that we would be saying that about Nebraska football needs to be good at the line of scrimmage, right? And then also playing in the Big Ten, like that. It seems like a no duh thing, but it is something that has definitely eluded Nebraska. Maybe some years they've had one side has been pretty good. The defensive line has had its strong points, but then the offensive line just hasn't. But they definitely have not had a year in a long time where you would say that's one of the top half of football teams in the conference on both the offensive and defensive line. Like, it just has been a long time since that was the case, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they've also struggled mightily during those times too.
Okay, well, let's talk about some hopeful stuff, some more positive stuff, because now, as we've talked about Nebraska, as I've talked with you now about Nebraska, and I talked with Steve on the podcast last week about Nebraska, it veered more into I don't know about this team. Let's talk about some positive stuff.
Okay.
Teams around the country, doesn't have to be Big Ten, doesn't have to be Big Ten West, doesn't have to be Nebraska-centered teams around the country that you can't wait to watch. I asked you to come armed with three teams. You did. Thank you for doing your homework. Congratulations. You passed the test.
Unlike last first.
Give me your.
It's fine.
We had a technical glitch last time. It's not your fault. Okay. Give me your first team that you would like to talk about.
Okay. The first one will be Notre Dame. This is a team, it's funny because all of my teams do have one thing in common. And I will say that at the end of talking about them, but Notre Dame, I'm just fascinated by, in a way that I've never been necessarily a Notre Dame hater. Even growing up in Illinois, they were talked about a ton, but I didn't really care one way or the other. So the outsized coverage and the over ranking and all of that, I don't really care. But right now, I'm fascinated by what's happening with them. So losing Brian Kelly in the way that they did, promoting Marcus Freeman, and kind of his meteoric rise and just kind of taking over that particular program and him being able to put his spin on what's happening. I kind of look at things through the recruiting lens. And actually I was just reading something about this yesterday where apparently one of his things is they're starting to aim higher on the recruiting trail. Like, Notre Dame has always been a pretty good recruiting program, and they had taken a step up recently under Brian Kelly, but he really wants to go after 4 and 5 star players on a consistent basis. To the point to where I think they've only offered a handful of 3-star guys for the current recruiting class, and that's on purpose. It's by design. There's just a lot there, just overall with that program, that really has my interest, and I'm fascinated on how they do this season.
There is such a key and stark. There are two camps for college football coaches right now. There's the old hat, Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Brian Kelly. Old style of coaches, and you know, that's lumping a bunch of guys in with two broad strokes because they're all different kinds of coaches. But then there's like the Dan Lanning, Lincoln mm-hmm. Riley, Marcus Freeman, where one of the defining characteristics of like the younger generation of coaches is energy.
Yeah.
And it's energy directed at recruiting. And it's not to say, Nick Saban has number one, number two, number three classes every single year. So it's not like he's not putting energy into recruiting, but it just feels like a different kind of like urgency with some of the younger guys. And like Marcus Freeman absolutely feels like one of those guys. Yeah. And those are the coaches that are like the up and coming coaches that are having success.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. One of the other coaches, spoiler alert, that we'll talk about, Mario Cristobal, I also think figures into that discussion as well, and kind of that more new school mode of coach. But it definitely, there is a stark difference in that. And it's so funny, though, with the Saban thing, because you're right in that obviously he has top recruiting classes every year, but more so than kind of those other older school coaches, even though he's the oldest of those guys, he also seems to just embrace what he has to embrace to be successful, right? Like we've seen that, whether it's his comments recently about NIL, which I still think that were more of just a warning shot than anything. His comments about the transfer portal were like that too, and spread offense. Or don't forget that part too, as he then adopted it in one championships doing it. So I definitely think though that like being able to adapt to those things is definitely a characteristic of those older coaches that seem to still find success as well.
Yeah, and I guess that would be the good differentiating factor between the older coaches that are having success, mm-hmm. like a Nick Saban, and older coaches that are more just like, nope, this is how I want to do things. This is the way we're going to do things. The old school method is that adaptability piece of it. And there's a guy around here that would not fit into that category. I have Wisconsin on my list.
Okay.
Like, are we getting Graham Mertz that we thought we were going to get? Because if we're getting Graham Mertz that we thought we were going to get, a backfield of Graham Mertz and Braylon Allen should win the West, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Iowa won it last year, Northwestern the year before that. And then it was Wisconsin, I believe. And then it was Northwestern the year before that. So, like, they've made it to the Big Ten Championship. Correct me if I'm wrong here. One
time in the
last 4 years.
Was there a Minnesota year in
4 years? I think there was a Minnesota year where they split, but I don't think they made it to the conference title game.
Maybe that's what it was.
Live video, and I don't come with my research fully
fleshed out. You're all good. I do like that backfield, though. I think
it's like
with what you think their offensive line should always be. Like you're
them in the trenches, especially with the defense. I really like Jim Leonard as a defensive coordinator, and that hasn't changed for a while. They should be like a high floor team. So, if the backfield of Graham Mertz and Braylon Allen is what you know we expected Graham Mertz to be when he dazzled at the All-American game and coming out of high school, and then Braylon Allen takes another step. He's one of my favorite guys. Like he had that tweet after he turned 18 where he's like, can't call me a 17-year-old anymore. Like he fully embraced it. He's awesome. He's great, which sucks because they have another freaking phenomenal running back, which is ridiculous and super unfair. But I just think like, you know, if I got my math right, like they haven't won a Big Ten West outright in they've won it once in the last 4 years, made it to a Big Ten title game. So shouldn't Wisconsin be doing that more? like shouldn't Wisconsin be doing that more? So you know they finally figured out the running back position, and then they've got one of the highest rated quarterback signees that they've ever recruited. If this is not the year, if Nebraska is, as FPI says, the favorite to win the division, or if like Northwestern does its typical thing where it yo-yos from really bad to then really good and wins the division, if Wisconsin doesn't win the division, do we start talking about Paul Chris? Because people were talking about Paul Chris last year.
That's a good point. They were talking about him last year. And remember, people were like, whoa, what's up with this? But it didn't seem – yeah, we're right there on the edge of that.
It was something that cropped up for like a brief moment. Mm-hmm. So, like, if they're not in a position to just run away with the West again this year, Do we start talking about him more? I don't know. That seems absurd given the level of success that they have consistently hit. But I don't know. So they're one of the teams that I just can't wait to watch because I'm curious if it's going to be more old, you know, like Wisconsin, like we've been used to. You know, one of the things that I love in the yearbook every year is Brandon can pretty much just copy paste the Wisconsin, what Wisconsin does well section yeah. from the year prior, where he's like, you know what they're going to do. They're going to run the ball and they're going to be really good. But once they got Graham Mertz, they're like, hey, we have this shiny quarterback. We can throw the ball now. And then they realized, oh, if we put too much on his shoulders, it's not a good mix. So let's go back to the running game. And then it took them a while to find Braylon Allen. Now they found Braylon Allen. So what do we get from Wisconsin? I'm very interested in watching them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Now that like you've laid out a compelling case on why a team that is typically like you're like, they're kind of boring is why it would be really fascinating to watch their season unfold. I'm with you. I also just think that it's just so wild and good for them that you can just like you can't name three starters on their defense right now, but you know that they're going to be good. Like, it's just such a thing like at Wisconsin where it doesn't matter the players at this point for them. And they've got some really good, like I Nick Herbig is a really good linebacker on their team. They always just have really good linebackers, but you know, they'll be solid on defense. It really feels like it comes down to can Graham Mertz be the guy that they thought they were getting? Because if he is, they should run away with the West because there's so many teams in flux right now or a lot of question marks with other teams in the West.
And because Braylon Allen is that good.
Yeah, that too. That should also help Graham Mertz because teams are going to have to come into the season committing a lot to stopping him.
It should. Yeah. I looked it up. I was correct. So they went to three of the first four Big Ten championships after the West-East division realignment. Mm-hmm. And they have only been to one of the last four. Northwestern has two. Iowa has one.
Wow. So. Northwestern has more than them in the last 4 years. Yeah, that's... yeah.
That's like, I mean, like, you know, every team goes through ebbs and flows and like Nebraska hasn't, you know, like contextually, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not like they've been bad, but, you know, given what they were accustomed to, you know, Wisconsin went 2011, 2012, then 2014. So they went, what, five times in the span of 7 years to a Big Ten title game. And they've only been once in the last 4 years. So that's not nothing.
Right.
So we'll see. Who's your second team?
My second team is actually loosely related to your team as, you know, the Caleb Williams sweepstakes this offseason where it felt like Wisconsin had a shot there. Ultimately, he ended up at USC, which is my other pick for fascinating team. Now, you know from knowing me that my affinity towards teams out west because of the Lakers, I ended up with a lot of crossover with USC football. I see a lot of their stuff. And normally I'm kind of interested in them because I think that they massively underachieve for what they can be. Those days are probably rapidly coming to an end. And the thing that I'm just really interested in is how quickly can that end, right? How quickly can Lincoln Riley really get them up and running? And I don't think, I'm not Colin Cowherd. I don't think it's going to be like 1 year they're going to be in the college football playoff. But I don't think it's going to be very long until they're like perennial college football playoff contenders. And so how quickly can he get that running? How quickly can he flip their kind of, and I hate using this, like their culture from what it was previously to what it needs to be? Like how quickly can he really make up ground with like Los Angeles recruiting, right? Like in keeping all of the, or Los Angeles, but also Greater California recruiting and keeping those guys home and making USC the destination that it once was, as you really think about like that Pete Carroll time in that era, right? When all of the guys stayed at USC at that point and they were obviously really good. Like there's just so much there when it comes to what Lincoln Riley has going on. Plus, the way that all of that went down will just naturally make people really interested in what's happening out there.
Yeah, he's a villain right now.
Yeah, like, which is so crazy because he went from like the coach that everybody loved, even if you didn't like, if you didn't root for Oklahoma, you still knew and liked him, to now he's the villain, even though Brian Kelly is still hanging out there. Like, sure.
They are a villain. And what's going to be really interesting with them is I think the Josh Connerly recruitment perfectly sort of encapsulates the situation that they find themselves in. They should be able to recruit anyone that they want. And traditionally, when USC has been really good, USC has been able to recruit anyone that they want. Mm-hmm. And when USC has been really good, they've been able to, you're not going to lock down the state of California, but they've been able to get the top kids from the state of California. The five-star offensive lineman that picked Oregon over USC at the last second, a lot of the reporting was that he got a massive NIL deal from Oregon. So USC has deep pockets, obviously. They're one of the teams in college football that's going to have deep pockets. But, like, that is the difference between Pete Carroll USC, where if they were really good, they could just do whatever they wanted, and modern-day recruiting, where, yes, you have to be really good to get into the field with some of those top recruits, but you also got to have NIL packages lined up right. if you're going to get those guys. And it, you know, I think just to lose like a high profile five-star offensive lineman in the conference to a guy who, you know, comes in Dan Lanning with maybe a pedigree as a more physical coach, or a coach that's going to give you more physical football than what Lincoln Riley has. That's definitely going to be interesting, because like Utah's right there in Oregon. Like Oregon almost made my list because I can't wait to watch Dan Lanning.
Yeah, I thought about that too. Defense. Yeah.
Because I really like Dan Lanning. Oregon almost made my list. But like, yeah, there's like an assumption that USC is going to immediately be elevated to this team that's just going to run away with the Pac-12, when I don't think that that's going to be the case. I looked up FPI numbers. If you use FPI to construct a win total for them, their expected record or projected record would be 7.8 and 4.2. So 8-4. Do you think the Vegas line is going to be 8-4, or do you think the Vegas line is going to be 9?
I think it'll be 9.
I bet it'll be 9. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, what's going to be, if they win 8 games, let's say they win 7 games, it's a year one. So it's supposed to be like that to an extent.
Yeah.
But is that a disappointment? And because it's USC, and because it's Lincoln Riley, and because it's Caleb Williams, like if they win 7 or 8 games and they're not in contention for a Pac-12 South title at the end, like what is Colin Cowherd tweeting about this team?
I wonder if they win 8, if they go 8-4 in the regular season, go to a bowl game, like will that be viewed as a disappointment for them?
And here's the other
of a new coach. Like, man, that's tough. That's a tough world. Yeah.
Here's the other piece of it. UCLA's projected win total is 9-3.
That's sneaky. The teams that you could have put on the list like that, they're a sneaky one. But like, man, if they okay, yeah, let's set up this scenario. If USC goes 8-4 and UCLA goes 9-3 in that first year, and yeah, that would be something.
Based on FPI, UCLA would be a 3-point favorite against USC. That'd be a fun game. That'd be a very fun game.
I'm hoping, I'm rooting for a very like fun atmosphere, and like they have the same record at the end of the year somehow, like before they play. Like that would be great.
That would be very cool. My second team, I guess we're going to stay out west, is Washington State. And it's purely because like Washington State with Mike Leach there was just throwing the ball over the yard. They had the air raid. They went away from that a little bit with Nick Rolovich. That whole mess is behind them, and they get to go into a season without any of the like the sideshow distraction. It was a distraction, regardless of what you think about it.
Yeah.
They have Cameron Ward and Eric Morris, who was the head coach at Incarnate Ward, with Cameron Ward. And like this dude, they are massively sort of undervalued, I think, this offseason, because you know some of the models that leave out FCS to FBS transfers, it just looks like they lost their starting quarterback and didn't replace him. But they did replace him with an FCS All-American. Like they got Cam Ward, who threw for almost 5,000 yards passing last season in the offense that was directly picked up from Texas and moved to Washington. I can't wait to watch them. They're going to, you know, I don't know how many games that they're going to win, but they're going to throw the ball all over the place. And I think he's going to be one of those guys. He feels like he's going to be like the next year's version of Malik Willis at Liberty when it comes to NFL draft prospects and sort of looking at quarterbacks heading into the next NFL draft.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I think that he's going to be a guy this year in college football that people may not like. I don't know like how many people are going out of their way to watch full Washington State games, but they're going to want to see the highlights at least of what he did, right? And I think that, like, man, he was a guy that I just really thought should have gotten more looks from other schools. Like, I thought that, like, him being on the market to begin with was kind of wild, and a weird opportunity for obviously a lot of different teams that needed quarterbacks this offseason, and could use like a dynamic quarterback that has put up a lot of numbers. So that's a really sneaky pick. That's a good pick right there.
Thank you. What's your third team?
My third team, we're gonna crisscross the country. We're gonna go all the way down to the 305 and talk about Miami. It's funny because so many of these, and this underscores my whole original point about the chaos in college football. Like, so much of this stuff is actually connected with like degrees of separation from it, right? We talked a little bit about Dan Lanning, the reason that he's out there. So Mario Cristobal went to Miami. I really like Mario Cristobal as a coach, and I like a lot of the things that he brings to the table, whether it's energy on the recruiting trail, a physical style of football, which I thought was just the perfect way to kind of take Oregon to the next level. And obviously they're trying to continue that. He's obviously an alum of Miami, and he's going to try to restore the U and be like the next coach to try and do that. I just wanted, there you go, throw up that U.
You see them get booed the first quarter of their spring game at a soccer stadium? Did you hear about this?
No, I did not hear about
that. There was apparently a massive problem with drops in their spring game, and fans booed them in the first quarter.
Wow.
Okay, and they played their spring game at a soccer stadium.
Okay, so maybe this actually goes to my point then, is that I like all that stuff about Cristobal, but I'm not sure like what the expectation should be for that. That's where I was going there, because there's something to me about like, and there's these programs, like Tennessee is another one of those programs where like they were good when I was a kid and they just can't seem to really get it going, right? And Miami seems to be one of those, and you just, because you don't follow or cover them like super close, you don't know why it is that they can't seem to get it really turned around, no matter what happens with a new coach. So like, I want to know if he can be the guy to start to turn them around, but I don't think that'll be an easy fix, because you also have, related to what he's trying to do, you still have been, so much of this is tied to being able to keep guys from Florida home, which is how they built the program to begin with, right? Florida State is going to do something. Mike Norvell may flame out. That might be the something, or they could get it turned around. You've got a new coach at Florida whose name is escaping me for some reason at this point. What's the Florida coach?
Billy Napier.
Billy Napier. I could picture him in my mind. I couldn't think of his name. Billy Napier. Like, he seems to be kind of we talked about those newer school coaches. Like, he kind of seems to be that, right, as well. So like, what happens there? And then you've got the former national champs, UCF, that wants to try to do some stuff too, right? So like, what's going to happen down there? Like, that is just fascinating. And maybe I should have put all of them on the list, but we're going to stick with Miami as a team that really interests me this year.
They like, okay, let's, who has the best future in the state of Florida? You're picking futures, Miami, okay, Florida State, or Florida. With Cristobal, would you lean Miami? Because I kind of would.
I kind of would too, because I think he's the best coach of the three. And maybe that's because I've seen him do it at the Power Five level. Maybe that's what it is. Like, because I saw him have success at Oregon, I feel like he can also do that at Miami. Whether I have questions about that with Florida and Florida State's coach.
Also, isn't Miami just the cooler team of the three? Like elite Florida prospects, elite Florida high school kids. You're not going to UCF. Sorry, all apologies to the Knights. You're not going to UCF. If you got it down between Miami, Florida, and Florida State, and all of them have good coaches, and all of them are like reasonably good to really good, you're picking Miami, right? Because Miami's just cool. Especially with Ed Reed hanging out on the sidelines, right?
Yeah.
You're just going to pick Miami?
Yeah, I think Miami, Florida State, Florida, of the cool factor would be how that would go. I think so.
Yeah.
So, but I'm also, I would think so. Yeah, I would say that.
That makes it really interesting, because then they've got a quarterback that has like preseason Heisman buzz, yep, in Tyler Van Dyke. So like, if they have a good year, one, under Cristobal, we know that Cristobal can recruit. like they become super interesting really quickly because the ACC is just waiting for that second team behind Clemson to take over and be good for more than just a season.
Yeah, there's a higher, I think your ceiling, if you could get Miami, and I guess technically Florida State would then fall into this too, if one of those teams could ever like really consistently be good, like the conference A needs that, but it is ripe for being that second team because you just got the opportunity there because the rest of the conference, you're just never going to be, even like as you have one of those other teams in the conference always kind of just rotates as being good, but if you could consistently be that, like your path to be in the conversation every year in that conference is just wide open.
So I have a collection of teams that I cannot decide on for the third one. So I'm going to give you the field and you tell me which one that you want to talk about.
Okay.
NC State, sticking in the ACC. NC State, who is like a sneaky, team. Ole Miss or Texas.
Oh, man.
Which one do you want to
My last two are really – only because you groaned, let's go Texas. Sorry.
So Bijan Robinson is awesome.
He is.
He's awesome. Steve Sarkisian had good years at Washington, coordinated one of the best offenses in college football history at Alabama. I mean, most people expect him to be successful at Texas. They had – a bad first season, but they were in a bunch of games. Almost lost to Kansas. Got to sneak that in there.
Good job.
And they have the number one prospect in originally the 2023 class who reclassified to 22, who reclassified to 21, enrolled at Ohio State, got a bunch of money from Ohio State, then left Ohio State to go to the place that he was originally planning to go to on the timeline he was originally planning to go to them. I just have to say Quinn Ewers belongs on the all finesse team. Like it's awesome. Well done.
Right out, him and Chandler Parsons hanging out.
Well done. Got the NIL money. Didn't play. Retains his eligibility, ended up at the place that he originally committed to. Well done. Good job. All finesse team. They should have a good offense. And they have the wide receiver who was really good as a freshman last year that I'm blanking on his name. But
just got one from Alabama.
Yeah, they should have a young, talented offense with what most people think is a talented offensive mind in Sark. So, they should be good. Are they going to be the sixth best team in the country as FPI labeled them? No. I would be shocked if they were. Somebody give me like a thing to do. Like, I'm not going to go streaking. I don't want to do that. But somebody give me a thing to do. Like, tweet at me a thing that I need to do if like Texas wins the Big 12 or like wins 11 games. Like, tweet me something that is somewhat reasonable and I'll do it. That's just not like streaking because nobody wants to see that. I'll do it because I don't think they're going to win 11 games, but they should be good, right?
They should be. Like, all signs point to them being good. They've been one of the best teams in the country this offseason at landing guys that at least have big names from the transfer portal. The things you laid about that offense, the more you think about it, like, they should be very, very good on offense. They have a chance to be dynamic on offense. They need help on the defense. And maybe they get that from O'Shawn Mathis, who, you know, big storyline around here. We talked earlier about those programs that should be good or used to be good that we just can't figure out why they can't, even if they have, even through multiple coaching tenures. Like, Texas is maybe the poster child for that right now, even though they have not been like terrible. Right. So it's again relative, but they're not as good as they would like to be, think they should be, or as they're always projected to be in the preseason. And so it just makes them such a unique program for so many different reasons, but they should at least be able to put up a lot of points this year.
Texas is, maybe I'm off base. Maybe I'm off base. So if I am, people are going to yell at me. It's fine. I wonder if Texas's problem isn't somewhat similar to Texas A&M's problem in that the boosters and the donor base and the powerful alumni in that situation think that Texas should be a lot better than it is. And when they've got a guy who, like, let's say wins a Sugar Bowl and then has a 7-5 season, they run that dude out of town because it wasn't a 12-1 season. Like, I wonder if that's not the problem. And for like the longest time, the problem with Texas A&M is that Texas A&M thought that it was so much better than it was. Now with NIL, Texas A&M gets to be as good as it wants to be because of all that money that's down there. And they were on my list too. I thought about them. They got to win some games.
They definitely have to win games.
Did you see the thing that Kevin Sumlin had the same record through his the start of his tenure at A&M as Jimbo Fisher has?
I did.
That was remarkable. Yeah,
like they are a team. You know what Texas A&M is, not to sidetrack us, but Texas A&M is that team this year where if they don't win games, they're not just going to hear about it from like their rivals. It's not going to just be Texas that's like giving them crap. It's going to be everyone, right? Yeah, like that's going to be a team that every fan base in the country is going to be taking shots at them. Like they're going to be that team.
You're going to get columns from Dan Wolken about Jimbo Fisher. It's going to happen.
I can feel the Pat 40 column being written right now.
It's going to happen.
The drafts right now.
Back to Texas. Xavier Worthy is the wide receiver that I was thinking of. 981 yards and 12 touchdowns last year. They should be. It just makes me sad to talk about. It pains me to talk about Texas. But the other thing with Texas, now it is – I think it's a little ridiculous to give them like a 20% chance to make the college football playoff, which is what FPI gave them, a 1-5 chance. I think that's a little ridiculous right now.
Yeah.
But Oklahoma State has a bunch to replace on defense and a quarterback that has never been consistently elite. OU has a bunch to replace and a first-year quarterback. Baylor has a bunch to replace. If this is it, this is your year.
Yes, you know, it's Oklahoma absolutely State's, yeah, and their yeah. Oklahoma State lost their defensive coordinator too, right? Like,
yeah, but then they got Derek Mason to take a pay cut and leave an SEC job.
You were talking about being able to bounce back. Like that was a sneaky bounce back. Yeah.
Like if you lose your defensive coordinator to Ohio State, that's because it's a guy that you didn't want to lose.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. You know, you definitely did not want to. And Texas has kind of the looming thing of like being in the Arch Manning sweepstakes. That'll be fun.
They do.
That'll be really fun.
Do you think Quinn Ewers is going to be good, great, underwhelming in his first year?
It's really hard because he almost has to be great, not good. It's unfortunate for him. I think by my prediction, he'll be solid. He'll just be solid, and it won't be, and that will leave people like angry. Like, and I think that he'll get like hate for that. But man, it's gonna be hard for him. But at the same time, like we're talking about, there's a lot of weapons there, right? Like, if you want to be like able to outperform your ski, so to speak, like having that amount of talent around you on offense, particularly at running back, to be able to hand the ball off to Robinson, will be really helpful.
So here's one of the things that I wonder with him. Every quarterback that Ohio State has just kind of rolled out one after the other, we've been like, well, I don't know. It'll take some time. I don't know. It might be good right away. And then he's just awesome. Justin Fields was just phenomenal. And then CJ Stroud took him a game against Minnesota, and then he was great.
Mm-hmm.
A couple games. Then he was really good. Like, is this just like some little magic dust in Columbus that they just sprinkle on guys? And maybe Quinn Ewers being there for a year, in addition to the bag that he secured by being there, we got a little bit of that magic dust sprinkled on him, and he's going to be an exceptional quarterback right away. You know, quarterbacks are great younger and younger in their careers in college football right now. And maybe there's something going on with Ryan Day and with Ohio State and that program that, you know, they get guys ready to play at a super high level right away. Now, you know, Ohio State has first round draft picks out the wazoo on the offensive line.
And a wide receiver.
Yeah, I haven't looked at Texas's offensive line to know if that's the case, but you know, I don't know, you know, maybe there's a little something that gets sprinkled on quarterbacks when they go out there, and maybe he's got a little bit of that dust left over.
So maybe he needs to just carry over what he learned from Ryan Day. Then combine that with Sark's wisdom, because obviously he can coach offense, and then he'll be good to go.
I was about to say, don't listen to Steve Sarkisian. So we can put the little ticker on the bottom of this video.
I messed it up.
Brain news, don't listen to your head coach. Okay. So there's a
words of wisdom to not live by from me.
Words of wisdom from me. Tweet at recruits parents. Don't listen to your head coach. Those are the two.
Great.
There we go.
Awesome.
Do you want to talk about Texas A&M? Because they were like right there.
It's okay.
Okay. All right.
That's fine. Though Jimbo did have an all-time like phony rant when he went off about NIL at signing day.
That was great. Let's wrap this up on, I have a question for you.
Yep.
That I thought of while we were podcasting. So you were not prepared for this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
You tweeted that Casey Rogers was a big departure for Nebraska. It was a big transfer portal loss. You got a lot of pushback on that. If Nebraska, obviously not like at quarterback, but like who is a guy that would be like just unlosable? Like you cannot lose this guy to the transfer portal. If you're thinking about their team as we move into this offseason, who are like what's a position that you think no more, can't have any more attrition, nothing else can happen to this?
It's the same position. It's defensive line. If Ty Robinson were to leave, like,
don't say that. Don't do that.
I shouldn't even put an actual name to that. It. I apologize in
don't
advance for even
I'm knocking
putting
on my
that
desk.
In the thing.
Don't
yeah,
do that.
Like I don't have.
I asked you about player, and then I was like, let's not do that. Let's go position.
Yeah,
dude.
Like, see, and that's what I shouldn't have. That's on me. I'm sorry. Defensive
breaking
line.
News
delete,
at the bottom.
Delete. defensive line. They can't take another defensive line transfer because otherwise, I was really trying to. I was thinking through the other position groups and. You might be able to absorb, like, my second place finisher was actually inside linebacker. But you might be able to make that work. Defensive line. You can't lose another defensive lineman.
So could they just, I mean, like, maybe they're going to do this anyway, but couldn't you move some guys from outside linebacker, from linebacker down to the defensive line? Because you've got Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmacher who could play inside. And then Jalen Weaver is just a massive human being who could occupy space inside. So, I mean, you're talking about like trying to finagle your way into some ends. They played a little bit with just two down linemen last year. Like, mm-hmm. like there's a scenario where they could massage this and work it into something good. You know, I'm not saying like losing Casey Rogers is just okay. Like you can just move on from it. Like you want to, he was a guy that they developed. You want to keep those guys and get those guys on the field and see right. the fruits of your labor. But like, I mean, there's like a scenario where they could work this out. Right.
Yes. There's a scenario where they could do it. But it does involve like being able to, you have to combo this thing. You've got to probably get one more guy at least to play interior defensive line from the portal. And it, so that way, and keeping it realistic to just be like a rotational guy. And so that you could keep, because what you really don't want to have happen is on a week to week basis, Ty Robinson has to play 65 snaps. Like you just don't want, like eventually that's going to wear him down. So you've got to have another body or two that you can rotate in. And then you can start also mixing and matching, pinching down those ends and all of that stuff, especially against a team like Purdue, where you know they're going to want to throw the football. Like, that's a good game to do something like that. It teams that in the conference that like to throw it, but it's not the problem is not against those teams. The problem is going to be against the teams like your week, but 0-1 opponent in Northwestern, who I can't imagine how many times Pat Fitzgerald wants to run the football in that game right now. Like, they may not throw a pass. Like, I just don't know. Well, like, he's going to run the ball a lot as Nebraska is currently constructed.
Who's playing quarterback for them, by the way?
For Northwestern?
Yeah. Mm. Is it still the Hunter Johnson kid?
That's a good question.
I don't know who's playing quarterback for them. That, I guess
they've also lost a lot of guys. Like, they've had a lot of. Matter. Yeah, they've had a lot of guys that they've lost from last year to this year too. Like,
to bring us back to your first team that you were most excited about, they lost somebody from the secondary to Notre Dame. And then I don't know if you saw like some of the reports from Notre Dame's practices, like he had like a bunch of interceptions in the first couple days of practice. Like there was like a string where he had interceptions like every day for 2 or 3 days. Like Brandon Joseph is going to be good.
Really good. Yeah.
Really good for Notre Dame.
I mean, I'm excited. We got to Kyle Hamilton to Brandon Joseph. Nice.
We got to talk about Marcus Freeman. I'm happy. Thank you for letting us talk about Marcus Freeman.
Hey, no problem.
That's going to do it for this week. Thank you to Greg for coming on the podcast. It was nice to talk to you again. Shouts to you guys for listening to this every week. Shouts to Cam for producing this. Go follow Greg on Twitter. Go read his stuff on HailVarsity.com. And we'll be back next week. Thanks, guys.
Huda Media Production.